The website truthout.org has more on the same story. In late 2021, after nearly a year of attempts from the National Archives and Records Administration to obtain government records that Donald Trump had improperly removed from the White House, the former president told his advisers that he would return the records in exchange for documents relating to the Russia investigation. Donald Trump still determined to show he had been wronged by the FBI investigation into his 2016 campaign ties to Russia, suggested to his aides that they bargained for materials related to the inquiry by offering the National Archives and Record Administration the White House records he was keeping at his estate at Mar-a-Lago, according to reporting from the New York Times. For years, Donald Trump has denounced the Russia investigation, which was led by former special counsel Robert Mueller, and sought to determine whether or not Russia interfered in the 2016 presidential election on Donald Trump's behalf. Trump reportedly wanted documents from the Russia investigation because he believed that the National Archives and Record Administration had previously refused to disclose documents that would back up his unsubstantiated claims regarding the inquiry. The former president has frequently stated that the Russia investigation exonerated him of any wrongdoing. However, Robert Mueller has stated otherwise, noting that many of Donald Trump's actions could constitute obstruction of justice in the eyes of federal prosecutors. Trump's aides ultimately rejected the proposal to bargain for the documents with the National Archives and Record Administration. Later that year, Donald Trump relented and agreed to allow the National Archives and Record Administration to retrieve some documents from his Mar-a-Lago estate in Palm Beach, Florida, but only after the agency threatened to get Congress involved. When the National Archives and Record Administration examined the documents it retrieved in early 2022, officials noticed that many were marked as classified, prompting them to reach out to the Department of Justice. In June of 2022, the Department of Justice subpoenaed Donald Trump to return additional documents marked as classified and had his legal counsel sign an affidavit affirming that no more documents were at Mar-a-Lago.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Beijing's Great Hall of the People saw Xi Jinping, the Secretary General of the Chinese Communist Party, attempt to cement his power by setting out to clinch an unprecedented third five-year term as president. In his address to some 2,300 officials and delegates from across the country, he laid out his policies and lauded some of his government's achievements. Among those achievements, President Xi reiterated the validity of his harsh zero-COVID policies. Policies which, to this day, shut down major cities and operations in China sporadically and disrupt businesses in a world increasingly accepting of COVID-19 as a reality to live with. In fact, China's civil aviation predicts that by the end of next year, the country's air traffic, while double the current figures, will still be just 15% of what it used to be before COVID. The policy's toll on people's mental health, though, may have been the biggest cost of China's success in containing the virus. Repeated lockdowns has resulted in the Chinese youth developing gaming addictions, sleep abnormalities, and a reluctance to go outside. Of course, COVID wasn't the only thing President Xi discussed in his address. He called for accelerating the country's military development while China already spends the second largest military budget in the world after the US. The military plan aims to improve China's ballistic missile capabilities, develop various aircraft carriers, and establish overseas outposts. Xi can lay out such military development plans because he doesn't just hold the title of President of People's Republic of China or the title of Secretary General of the CCP. He is also chairman of the Central Military Commission. Taiwan's relations with China as well as the US have been clearly defined in the One China policy. It is the diplomatic acknowledgement by the US that there is only one Chinese government and that the US can have no formal ties with the island of Taiwan, but rather with the Chinese government. The policy has a long history dating as far back as 1949 after the end of the Chinese Civil War, but it was in 1979 when, under Jimmy Carter's presidency, the US finally established formal diplomatic ties with Beijing and thus severed ties with Taiwan and closed its embassy in Taipei. But in that very same year, the US also passed the Taiwan Relations Act, which meant that it would support the island's ability to defend itself by supplying it with arms. The US has always maintained strong informal ties with Taiwan. The One China policy was undermined much further during Trump's presidency, and not just because of former president's inflammatory remarks about China.
And then we had the horrible plague come in from China. Boy, oh boy, what they cost the world.
It was because after decades, Tsai Ing-wen, president of Taiwan, spoke to a U.S. president, breaking diplomatic protocol. Sino-U.S. relations have only gone downhill from there. The biggest offense in the eyes of China happened when U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited the island in August in a move that infuriated China. Since then, Beijing's resolve to reunify with Taiwan has only gotten stronger. Xi Jinping has time and again rejected any form of separatism, as well as interference in the island's affairs, as it considers Taiwan a part of its territory. Xi's call for accelerated military development could hint at his impatience over US meddling and his increasing resolve over following through with his reunification plans with Taiwan.
We gather at a vital time for the United Kingdom. These are stormy days.
The UK Prime Minister Liz Truss may not have known what she walked into when she took over the premiership just months ago from the former Prime Minister Boris Johnson. An economy battered by COVID-19, then the Ukraine conflict, which impacted the UK's economy negatively. With runaway inflation and a cost of living crisis, she had to come up with a plan. That plan was presented by the finance minister, or exchequer at the time, Kwasi Kwarteng. But she could never have anticipated the firestorm and crisis that erupted afterwards. After several U-turns of whether or not she would go through with what was called a mini-budget plan, she was forced to finally make amendments to the plan. And what many have called a move to save herself and her job, she fired the now former finance minister, Kwasi Kwarteng.
I met the former chancellor earlier today. I was incredibly sorry to lose him.
She replaced him with Jeremy Hunt, a former health secretary and foreign secretary, who was announced as Kwarteng's successor.
It was a mistake to cut the top rate of tax at a period when we were asking everyone to make sacrifices. And it was a mistake to fly blind and not to back up the economic plans that were announced with an independent forecast from the Office for Budget Responsibility.
Truss scrapped the pledge to reverse predecessor Boris Johnson's hike of corporation tax from 19% to 25%, a decision estimated to restore around £18 billion, or $20.1 billion, to the UK Treasury's coffers by 2026. Her explanation for scrapping the plan: markets were not ready for it.
But it is clear that parts of our mini-budget went further and faster than markets were expecting. So the way we are delivering our mission right now has to change.
The Institute of Fiscal Studies had doubts on this so-called mini-budget, basically calling into question where the money was going to come from. It said that unfunded tax cuts meant that the UK will need £60 billion in spending cuts. It also said that this would leave ministers making serious reductions in public services. This puts into question the claims made by the former Chancellor, Kwasi Kwarteng.
The government has been clear that protecting consumers is our primary focus and shapes our entire approach to this issue.
As for the 2.5% targeted growth, nonsense. Said the UK will struggle to grow at more than 0.8% on average over the next 5 years. In other words, the £45 billion cost of the mini-budget would wipe out any financial space left to the Chancellor by his predecessor, swelling Britain's debt as the share of national income for at least the next 5 years. The turmoil that exists in the UK mirrors what is happening across many European countries. Economies are under strain and people are suffering as a result. Wrong fiscal policies can be the reason for this suffering, but political directives also impact people's lives and well-being. That couldn't be more evident on the EU, led by the US, to continue the war on Russia, even if it meant that their own citizens would suffer as a result. But cracks are emerging following the US lead. For example, France has joined Germany in accusing the US of using the Ukraine war to overcharge for gas. After the Ukraine conflict, the EU was forced to start importing LNG from the US, as well as other countries. But the US's share had increased sharply, from 28 to 45%. On the other hand, deliveries from Russia dropped by 75%. But this statement from the French economy minister, Bruno Le Maire, shows that France may have caught on to the US role in the Ukraine conflict. Le Maire recently told French MPs that the conflict in Ukraine must not result in the US economic domination and a weakened Europe. This is while the economy minister, Robert Habeck from Germany, accused LNG exporters, including the US, of charging too much for gas at the time when Europe's biggest economy is struggling to balance its energy mix without Russian supplies, and when German companies are closing down factories due to high gas costs. Electricity cuts in the UK and emergency gas rationing in Germany are just a couple of signs of how European leaders are sacrificing their country in order to defeat Russia and the less threat that they face from it. As for their economies, Europe has already slipped into a recession, and there are no signs that it can devise a plan that would lower energy costs to pre-Ukraine conflict levels in order to save their economies.
Whether signed in the White House or overseen by a U.S. president or secretary of state, the United States has almost always had a role in any and all negotiations between Palestinian and Israeli sides. Looking at some of the more important instances of these talks, one can think of the first Oslo Accord in 1993 that was signed in Washington in the presence of then-U.S. President Bill Clinton. The 1999 Sharm el-Sheikh Memorandum that was signed in Egypt was also overseen by the U.S. through Madeleine Albright, then Secretary of State of the Clinton administration. The unsuccessful Camp David summits in the year 2000 was overseen directly by Bill Clinton himself. Following the unsuccessful peace talks, Clinton would make another effort at influencing the Israeli-Palestinian relations through the aptly named Clinton parameters, showing the extent of his and U.S. involvement in the talks. Sometimes this influence even meant that the fate of Palestine would be discussed without the participation of any Palestinian representative, as was the case in the Camp David Agreement in 1978, which was signed by Egyptian President, Israeli Prime Minister, and then US President Jimmy Carter, without even an Arabic version of the documents. These showed the never-wavering U.S. Pledge of Allegiance to Israel, a pledge that will always protect Israeli interests, which would automatically go against Palestinian interests. Among the most important of these interests is a trinity of inalienable rights defined by the Palestine National Council in 1974, which consists of Palestinians' rights to self-determination, an independent state, and most importantly, right of return. The most recent example of neglecting these rights occurred in 2020. During Trump's tenure, the deal of the century was presented, which many later called the flop of the century. The Trump peace plan was titled Peace to Prosperity, a vision to improve the lives of the Palestinian and Israeli people. But it was far from that. The plan had been delayed by 2 years and previously rejected by the Palestinians, who were not invited to the meeting. The plan never materialized, however, since, again, it was not representative of the Palestinians' rights on major core issues of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The first time Israel attempted to make the smallest bit of compromise was at the Camp David summit in 2000. Israel said it would be willing to allow 100,000 Palestinian refugees back to their homeland, while the millions of others had to be resettled wherever they were at the time. Also, Yasser Arafat, then chairman of the Palestine Liberation Organization, would have to forego the idea of right of return completely from then on. Similar ludicrous proposals that were rejected by Arafat were all proposed with the US being on board with these proposals. The US involvement in the so-called peace talks have time and again shown Palestinians and their officials that the US is not to be trusted as a neutral party. On the sidelines of the sixth summit of the Conference on Interaction and Confidence-Building Measures in Asia in Kazakhstan, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas had a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. In it, he expressed that he is happy with Russia's position on Palestine. He also said that he would only accept U.S. involvement in the conflict resolution process if other parties of the Quartet on the Middle East were present. The Middle East Quartet, established in Madrid in 2002, is a foursome of nations and international and supranational entities involved in mediating the Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations. Its members are the United Nations, the United States, the European Union, and Russia. Palestine's hand is now one of unity, since the Palestinian factions have all established peace amongst themselves, including Hamas and Fatah. Palestinian factions signed reconciliation agreements in Algeria. Hamas, Fatah, and 12 other Palestinian groups agreed to hold legislative and presidential elections within 1 year after the successful talks held in Algiers. Meanwhile, when it comes to peace talks between Israel and Palestine, Abbas has stressed that Washington should not be given free hand to act alone in resolving the decades-long Palestine-Israeli conflict.
Rising rivalries between the U.S. and China are set to dominate the coming years in the 21st century. That is because the U.S. has unveiled its long-delayed national security strategy, where China is named as the most consequential geopolitical challenge for the regime in Washington. That means that Washington is prioritizing winning over China, as Beijing is seen as the only global rival to the U.S. Jake Sullivan, the U.S. National Security Advisor, said, "The People's Republic of China harbors the intention and increasingly the capacity to reshape the international order in favor of one that tilts the global playing field to its benefit." The U.S. strategy further insists that China represents the most consequential challenge to the global order. It also says the U.S. must win the economic arms race with the superpower if it hopes to retain its global influence. The strategy has warned that China's rapid advances in technology is aimed at molding the world order. The strategy is in line with the rhetoric pursued by the Biden administration and his predecessor. Biden officials have accused Russia and China of looking to change the so-called rules-based order. The term has come to be seen as a synonym for Washington-led world order. The Biden administration has entangled itself in a number of global crises, including the war in Ukraine. The Washington regime encouraged the war in Ukraine by sending more weapons into the conflict zone. Washington is using the crisis to contain Russia, and by encouraging its allies to sever their energy ties with Moscow, Washington is trying to push European countries into its own sphere of influence. Furthermore, Washington is stoking tensions in the East Asia region by strengthening its ties with the Chinese Taipei. Back in August 2022, the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan, drawing an angry reaction from China. Beijing has warned that it will not tolerate Washington's meddlesome interference in its own affairs. But Washington's increasingly belligerent behavior in Europe and East Asia has pushed Russia and China closer together. They have forged closer ties in a variety of fields, including energy, business, and defense areas. Furthermore, both Moscow and Beijing are key members of the BRICS groups of countries and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Two bodies are playing key roles in shifting the Western-led balance toward a multipolar world. Russia and China have also forged closer ties with countries like Iran and India, which are emerging powers in the shifting geostrategic relations worldwide. It is now widely believed that Washington's ambitions to still lead the world is facing tough challenges. It appears that the regime in Washington has no longer the capability that it once possessed to dictate its hegemony.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
وحبس بين أطباقها بجرمه وجريرته وهو يضج إليك ضجيج مؤمل لرحمتك ويناديك بلسان أهل توحيدك ويتوسل إليك بربوبيتك
Brothers and sisters, we have reached this part of the Divine Commerce application in which Imam Ali alayhi salam, the commander of the believers, states, أَفَتُرَاكَ سُبْحَانَكَ يَا إِلَهِي وَبِحَمْدِكَ. Can't you see yourself? Glory be to you, my Allah. And yours is the praise. تَسْمَعُ فِيهَا صَوْتَ عَبْدٍ مُسْلِمٍ سُجِنَ فِيهَا بِمُخَالَفَتِهِ. Hearing within the fire of the hell the voice of a slave surrendered to you and imprisoned there because of his violations. Suffering the pangs of its torment because of his disobedience. وَحُبِسَ بَيْنَا طُبَاقِهَا بِجُرْمِهِ وَجَرِيرَتِهِ. Confined within its levels because of his sin and crime. وَهُوَ يَضِجُّ إِلَيْكَ لَجِيجَ مُؤَمِّلٍ لِرَحْمَتِكَ. While he laments before you with the lament of the one hopeful for your mercy. وَيُنَادِيكَ بِلِسَانِ أَهْلِ تَوْحِيدِكَ. He calls upon you with the tongue of those who profess your oneness. وَيَتَوَسَّلُ إِلَيْكَ بِرُبُوبِيَّتِكَ. He entreats you by your lordship. In this part, the commander of the believers is describing the state of the person who is imprisoned in the different levels of fire of hell because of his disobedience, because of his sins and crimes. But he is still hopeful of Almighty Allah's mercy. مُؤَمِّلٍ لِرَحْمَتِكَ, this part says. He is lamenting, but the lament of the one who is hopeful for Almighty Allah's mercy. There is a divine tradition that reads, O son of Adam, I did not set up this fire except for the disbeliever, the stingy, the cursed by parents, the hinderer of zakat payment, the adulterer, the unlawful seller, the forgetter of Quran, the annoyer of the neighbors, but those of them who repent, believe, and do good. So this tradition continues, My servants, have mercy on yourselves, because your bodies are weak, the journey is long, and the load is heavy. The path is exact, the fire is burning, the caller is the blower archangel, and the judge is the Lord of the worlds.
My Lord, glory and praise be to you. Would you disregard the voice of a Muslim slave imprisoned in hell for his disobedience and imprisoned within its pits for his evil doings and misdeeds? Crying out to you the cries of one who has faith in your mercy, and calling out to you in the language of those who believe in your unity, and seeking to approach you by means of your epithet.
Thank you, Allah, God, that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, dear listeners, as you listened to this divine tradition, we saw that even those ones who have committed unlawful crimes, who have been stingy, who have been disbelievers, even the ones who have hindered the payment of zakat, but they have believed, they have truly repented, Almighty Allah will show His mercy to them as well. Someone intended to go on a travel, and he told Hatam al-Asam, give me some advice. So Hatam al-Asam said, if you want a friend, know that Almighty Allah suffices for you. He continued, if you want a companion, the two illustrious angels suffice for you. If you want a lesson, this world suffices for you. He said, if you want an associate, Quran suffices for you. If you want a job, worshipping suffices for you. If you want a preacher, death suffices to you. And if these things suffice you, then the purgatory suffices for you. In fact, dear listeners, each of these phrases of Hatim al-Asam mentioned in this tradition and in this interesting advice can be expanded. The part where he says, if you want an associate, the Holy Quran suffices for you. We have learned from the traditions and in fact the lifestyle of the Ahlul Bayt, how important the Holy Quran is. The honorable daughter of the Holy Prophet had a strong intimacy with the Holy Quran that Salman reports, the Holy Prophet sent me to Fatima's house for doing something. I waited a little at the door till she saluted me. I heard her reciting the Holy Quran and grinding something without having someone to serve her. So, that's why we say that the Ahlul Bayt are the vicegerents of the Holy Quran. Ahlul Bayt's culture is the most perfect moral, ideological, and socio-political and scientific culture. And fortunately, a large section of which has been compiled by the believing Shi'i narrators. In fact, this very divine Kumail supplication we're discussing is one of those. And the practice of this culture of the Ahlul Bayt, reflected in their words and in this radiant Kumail supplication, will ensure good life in this world and the hereafter. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
In the limelight.
The consequences of Europe's submission to the US dictates are being felt deeply these days as the European households are grappling with soaring energy prices and high inflation rates. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote, Berlin must act quickly and drastically to avoid hospital closures, the health minister has warned. Many hospitals in Germany may be forced into bankruptcy due to soaring energy prices and inflation unless the federal government comes up with some form of assistance, Health Minister Karl Lauterbach said recently. He said, if we do not react quickly and really drastically, there will be closures. The German Hospital Federation complained last week that the funding gap could add up to around 15 billion euros in 2022 and 2023, but the health minister brushed aside that estimate, saying that no one can predict how expensive electricity will be next year. The Federation, however, said that extra energy costs account for just about a third of that sum, while the rest of it was non-refinanced increases in material costs due to soaring inflation. The health chief is set to meet Finance Minister Christian Lindner to discuss potential forms of assistance the government can provide, but has for now ruled out creating a specialized federal fund to help keep the healthcare facilities afloat. The hospitals are in a very special situation, he said, adding, but we cannot create separate special funds for each sphere. Annual inflation in Germany continues to rise by double digits, accelerating to 10.9% in September, finalized data from the Federal Statistical Office showed recently. The inflation rate has reached an all-time high since German reunification, the Stasi president George Thiel said, citing enormous price rises for energy products as well as food costs as the main reasons for the high inflation. Leading German economists have recently warned that skyrocketing gas prices could push the EU's largest economy into recession. They forecast that Germany will be among the countries worst affected by the global economic slowdown next year. The EU is currently struggling with a severe energy crisis, with gas prices hitting record levels, driving up overall inflation. Russia once covered over 40% of the EU's gas needs prior to the start of its military operation in Ukraine and the ensuing sanctions. Supplies have dropped dramatically this year, exacerbating the energy crisis as the bloc seeks to reduce its dependence on Russian energy and punish Moscow. German energy giant EnBW AG announced recently that gas prices for households will rise again by an average 38% starting on December 1st. The announcement comes around 3 months after the previous increase went into effect. Also, Anadolu website reported the incidence of bankruptcy claims filed by companies and partnerships in Germany have increased by 34% to 762 year-on-year in September, exceeding forecast, the Economic Research Institute IWH said recently. The institute has predicted a rise of 25% a month ago for September, it added. Stephen Muller, a director at the institute, said there will be visible increases in bankruptcies in the coming months. For October, IWH's leading indicators signal for a one-third more bankruptcies annually. While in November, even a 40% level can be exceeded, he noted. In addition to the seriously deteriorating economic situation, bankruptcies stemmed from a sharp increase in prices of important factors of production, Mueller said. While the European Central Bank's interest rate hikes raised the financing costs for companies, the increased average wage per hour from 10.45 euros to 12 euros as of October added new costs to firms' budgets. the rises in energy prices related to the ongoing Russia-Ukraine crisis have also adversely affected the cost. Also, AFP reported massive crowds of protesters took to the streets of Paris recently to voice discontent over the rising cost of living. It comes as the country's largest trade union continues a refinery strike that has closed gas stations across the country. The protest was organized by Jean-Luc Mélenchon, a former presidential candidate and leader of the left-wing France Unbound Party. A number of other leftist parties and organizations participated, with some calling on President Emmanuel Macron to take a stronger action against climate change. However, economic concerns are first and foremost on the minds of protesters. It's not the march of Mr. Mélenchon, the LFI leader told France 3 TV, adding, it's a march of the people who are hungry, who are cold, and who want to be better paid. The rise in prices is unbearable, LFI Deputy Manon Aubry told AFP, adding, it is the greatest loss of purchasing power in 40 years. France's inflation rate currently stands at 6%, while almost all of the country's industrial sectors have recorded a drop in activity due to rising energy costs, largely a result of the EU's sanctioning of Russian fossil fuels following the launch of Moscow's special operation in Ukraine. With household energy bills soaring, firewood is once again in demand in France, and power outages have been forecast. Clashes between far-left radicals, a regular fixture at French protests and police officers were reported, with riot police firing tear gas to subdue the black-clad rioters. Amid the protests, France's CGT trade union is continuing strikes at oil refineries, demanding pay rises for workers. The strikes, which have been ongoing for 3 weeks, have caused shortages and rationing at gas stations. GCT said recently that it rejected a pay offer from oil giant Total Energies.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
England's Paradise Wildlife Park welcomes its new guest, an endangered red panda cub. The mother, Tilly, gave birth to the cub just 1 month after she lost her breeding partner, Nampang. Experts say Tilly had been under a breeding project for 4 years. The cub has been named Little Red, and his birth is being celebrated as a, quote, symbol of hope. Red pandas are classed as an endangered species and are on the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The bushy-tailed bamboo munchers dwell in high-altitude Asian forests, and their population is now fewer than 2,500. Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. Takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to afloat. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants. A celebrated Chinese artist integrates his life experiences and the beauty of his homeland using his own distinctive style of traditional painting. Chen Jialing is known for his Chinese ink paintings. Chen brings to life the imaginative richness and culture through his depictions of landscape with every brush of color. He is most famous for breaking traditional painting techniques while staying within the framework of the art form. Chen says one of his favorite subjects is the Jianggong Mountains, especially during certain hours when the sunlight offers its own visual delights.
The composition of this painting is based on the main peak of the Jianggong Mountains, because the main peak is the most majestic and imposing, especially at noon. The sun shines on the trees, forming a contour light involving trees and the large mountains, which is extremely beautiful.
The 85-year-old artist has also used fused traditional landscape painting with modern technology. Though Chen has participated in numerous art exhibitions, but he says his first solo exhibit was held in his 70s, and that's when his career really took off. Chen says he plans to paint as much of his homeland's stunning scenery as possible during his lifetime.
Freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well, just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre-Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats, mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Ershan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Ershan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Ershan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing. An aircraft powered by electricity may still be some way off, but one of its types is already here thanks to a whole range of innovative solutions being developed by aviation firms. American company Aviation Aircraft has debuted its all-electric plane in Washington State. The aircraft, named Alice, took off the runway at Grand County International Airport and flew for 8 minutes. It reached an altitude of 3,500 feet before touching down the ground. According to the company, the aircraft produces no carbon emissions, significantly reduces noise, and costs a fraction to operate compared to usual light jets. The company says it continues to develop and tweak the plane's battery system for an hour flight.
We're targeting a design criteria of 35 minutes for a charge. Okay, and so that'll be a charge for the typical route length. It's actually, as I just said, it's actually a design point. So going back to the comment I made earlier about designing batteries for aircraft, it's one of the considerations is how quickly do we want it to charge? How much power do you want to be able to draw from it? So again, we're targeting, call it 30 minutes of charge for an hour of flight time or about 2C if you're...
The company aims to find its way into the market for trips that sit between 150 and 250 miles, a range that features aircraft similar in size to Alice. It will also be for both commuter and cargo flights. For aircraft manufacturers, this paradigm shift is driving fuel savings in flight and on the ground, reducing carbon footprints and NOx emissions while also improving reliability and cutting maintenance costs. Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, five with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people.
In most of its habitats, the heavily trafficked pangolin faces the biggest threat from humans. But in Taiwan, these gentle creatures are exposed to quite a different danger, feral dogs. In the island, a government policy has led to a surge in the population of feral dogs. The pangolins share most of their roaming area with the stray animals. Plus, these scaly animals cannot move as fast as their attackers. When faced with danger, pangolins curl themselves into a ball shape. But the tail still remains at the most outer side, and that's where the dogs hit them hard.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.